I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. Next up, the book biz. This is where we look at the forces shaping who gets written, published, and read. We'll talk to Sarah McLean, a best-selling author and host of the incredible podcast, Faded Mates. We're going to talk to her all about romance as the engine of modern publishing and why romance rules publishing right now. Welcome, Sarah. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
I am so excited to be here in New Hampshire. When I was growing up, a million trillion years ago, my parents had a little house in Ashland, which is right next to Plymouth, for those of you who aren't over there ever. And every weekend, my dad and I would drive to Plymouth to get the paper, the newspaper in print, and we'd listen to NHPR on the radio. Public radio is the engine, and it has been for a long time, so I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, we love to hear that. So you are romance author extraordinaire, and also you are right in the middle of the biz. You have this podcast, Faded Mates, so you have a broader view as well as just being a writer. And I wanted to talk to you about this idea that romance is the engine of modern publishing. Do you agree?
I do agree, and I think that romance isn't just the engine of publishing right now. I think romance has often been the engine of publishing over the years. You know, romance, modern romance, the way we think about romance, it started in the 1970s. It was a genre that was written largely by women, largely for women, and in the 1970s, that meant women who were cutting coupons to buy their paperback novels. And there was a lot of money in women publishing discovered. And then as the years have progressed, publishing and other industries have discovered there's a lot of, not only do women hold the purse strings largely in households, you know, as the genre has expanded to include queer people and people of color and people of all abilities, you know, marginalized people who are generally thought of as being marginalized in a society, what's happened is, you know, it has encouraged all of those people to come and join us here in romance, to find space in romance, and they're dollars are here too. And so we do keep the lights on in publishing.
And by keeping the lights on, you mean literally earning huge chunks of what these traditional houses are making.
The best sellers of the last 5 years, I would say, at almost every publishing house have been romance novels. Even if you're talking about a house that doesn't have a sort of an author who everybody at home knows, you're talking about houses that have massive romance imprints that are just moving books in an impressive, impressive way. And so we can't be ignored anymore, I think. It was easier to ignore us in the early days when we kept the lights on because with those silly books for girls. But now we're pretty serious.
So why romance? What do you think it is about romance?
I mean, romance is the antithesis of what we are living right now. It is joy. It is hope. It is happily ever after. And what's fascinating, what's amazing about romance and what I think we do particularly well is we can, because so many of us write so quickly, we are able to write stories that really reflect the society that we are living in, that speak to the fears and the hopes and the dreams and the concerns of readers right now today in 2026. And we're able to take you on this really up and down journey, this roller coaster ride of the highest emotional highs, the lowest emotional lows, and land you at happily ever after. At the end of a romance novel, people are in joy. And the world is in a better place. It may not be solved, right? In so many of these romance novels, I write historicals. In historicals, you know, the world is still the world. We are still moving through a lot of chaos and sadness and trauma. But at the end of a romance novel, we are better than we were. And at this point, it feels like that should be the goal for us. Like, how do we leave it better than we've had it? And that's what romance does.
Yeah, when I'm reading a really good romance novel, it's all about the emotions. I'm not even thinking about the mechanics, the beauty of the sentence, right? I'm in it for the plot and the feel. And do they get together, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of joy in camp, right? Romance is campy. And it's often, you know, the industry and readers who don't kind of understand the genre sort of turn up their noses at like, oh, but it's so like, it's so cheesy, to use a word from last century. But it's supposed to be, right? We're supposed to feel feelings when we read romance novels. I'm supposed to feel that like tight in your chest feeling of emotion when, you know, it might not work out between these crazy kids. And it's so important that we feel those big feelings because the world is flattening feeling for us. You know, I think a lot of us are going through a lot of tough times right now. Things are really expensive. We're worried about our kids, our house, the groceries, whatever it is. And in order to survive that, right, humans flatten our emotions. We just sort of get through it. And romance doesn't let us get through it. Romance says we feel, right? We feel every emotion because we learn from emotions. We share them with each other. Emotions are what make us human. They make us loved. They make us lovable. They give us the capacity to love. Yeah.
I hear you, though, this disconnect or this, you know, people calling it cheesy. It always gets under my skin. Here at Check This Out, you know, this is a literary show. I interview emerging authors. Penn Faulkner Foundation is one of my sponsors. And yet to cover literature today, I have to be covering romance. I mean, I love it. I'm a fan anyway.
You know, I think it's, I mean, of course, I live my life banging the drum for romance, right? And I think you're absolutely right. If you're going to cover literature, you have to cover romance. You know, because all genre writers write so fast, and what we do is we write these like propulsive plots with these big feelings and like high stakes. And what we're constantly doing is telling the story of our society, of our world, even when we're setting them in space or setting them with dragons or setting them in 1840, like I do in London, then what we're always doing is telling the story of right now, today, and the worries and the concerns and the life that we all live. We are myth makers. Characters in all genre, act as heroes. They move the story forward by doing scary, heroic things. And if you think of genre as being the map of mythology for 2026, like these are the books that in the future will tell the stories of our heroes, it's kind of a cool thing.
But it's true. I mean, I think that it's a lot easier to talk about whatever is going on in the world if we can put that in 1840s or a dystopian future, right?
Of course. It's Vaseline on the lens, right? It refracts the storytelling in just such a way that you can maybe have a conversation about something that in 2026 in a contemporary story would feel too much.
Sarah, let's talk about the community around romances, right? This isn't just about books anymore. It's really rock star culture in so many ways because we have people lining up for midnight launches. They're dressing up as their favorite characters, writers, right? It's an entire community. It's not just I read a book and I move on. Let's talk about that as the engine behind romance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first things first, the books are bangers, right?
There's yes, they are.
Letting, I think romance lends itself to community. And it does that because of its roots, its deep roots in a kind of subversive culture of women who were reading, who were, like I said, were coupon clipping in the 70s to, you know, save that extra $3 so they could pull that, you know, that paperback novel off the shelf in the grocery store and add it to their groceries. And then as the genre progressed, it became space for queer readers, for Black and brown readers, for readers of different bodies, for readers with disabilities. And so I think what ended up happening was it was sort of a general space. It is a space that lends itself to community. It is an early adopter in a lot of ways. Romance has always been the genre that is the test balloon for publishing. We adopted ebooks early. We had paperback early. We were full cast audio, duet narration. I mean, like the audio, the expansive space of romance audio has proven like we adopt early technologies. And so we are a space for high volume readers who want to talk about books. That plus the pandemic and the sense of loss that so many of us had during the pandemic of community, right? A sort of a real sense of where do we go from here? Who do we spend time with? And romance was a really lovely house to spend time in during the pandemic because of the joy of the books, because of the happily ever after, because we were the genre of hope, and also because we had these very rich online communities where people could come and join us. And now the pandemic's over and those online communities are spilling out into the real world.
Sarah, one thing that is dear to your heart is book censorship and, you know, this idea of moral panic. And you've talked about how popular romance fiction can be an amazing resource for teenagers to learn about love and desire and to talk productively about boundaries and consent. And yet books are still being censored, right? Instead of being seen as a way to talk about these important issues. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I care a lot about book banning. I care a lot about censorship. I think for a lot of reasons. I mean, in all of history, being on the side of banning books has never been the good guys. You know, book banning is everywhere. It's in every state, in every community. So it's just a critical time. You know, what you asked about was romance for younger people. I started reading romance novels in the 1980s at the age of 11. And if you know anything about romance in the 1980s, you should know the content of those books is leaps and bounds more problematic than the content in most romance novels today. And I survived and I thrived. I think the reason why I loved romance is the same reason, you know, we've talked a lot about it. I loved the idea of adventure. I was a kid from a small town in Rhode Island. My vacations were in Ashland, New Hampshire. So it felt very much like romance was a window on a world that of possibility. There could be more for me outside of these small towns. And the heroines of romance novels romance was about the heroine. It gave you a sense of you could be the adventurer. And of course there was sex in those books. There is sex in the books. There is sex in the real world. And I now have a 12-year-old daughter. She just read an Allie Hazelwood book. And I think a lot about the fact that what she learned in that book was about consent. It was about pleasure. It was about partners who care about you, who care about your pleasure, who take care of you, who think about protection, who think about, birth control, who think about your future. It's about respect and consent. And all of those things are things I would rather have her learning from Allie Hazelwood than learning from the Reddit thread that she gets down the rabbit hole on at school on the computer. Fundamentally, that's where it is. Your kids are going to learn about sex. The question is where.
So 5 years from now, what do you think publishing is going to look like?
I don't know what publishing is going to look like 5 minutes from now. I think, as we said, you know, the big ships, the traditional publishing houses are having to figure out what to do, how to become more nimble. I think independent publishing is not going away, but it is clear that, you know, there are lions at the gate. AI is a huge, huge existential issue, you know, for the globe and also for publishing. Discoverability is virtually impossible for new authors. traditional publishers are scooping up popular romances from Kindle Unlimited and from independent publishing and publishing, you know, moving those authors over to the traditional publishing houses. It's tricky. I would say in 5 years, we're probably going to have to, we're going to have had to have reckoned with the sheer amount of AI slop in independent publishing. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I can't see that we would succeed much longer than that without handling that. I think romanticy will take a dip. We are a very fast genre, and things go up and things come down. I don't know what will fill the void. If I know one thing about romance, I know that we can figure out what comes next. And I know it'll be joyful, and I know it'll be full of hope, and I know that in 5 years we'll need it.
Sarah McLean, thank you so much for joining me today on Check This Out.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Rachel Barenbaum, author of the novels Abandon the Stars and Atomic Anna. You have been listening to Check This Out, a show where I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. Check This Out is a partnership between New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I'll be back next week with another new author you should not miss. Our producer is Jessica Hunt. NHPR's program director is Emily Quirk. Our partner, the Penn Faulkner Foundation's mission is to champion the breadth and power of fiction in America. The show is sponsored by C&S Wholesale Grocers Family of Companies, the podcast Totally Booked with Zibby and Zibby's Bookshop, and the Jack and Dorothy Byrne Foundation. Remember to go to your local library or bookstore and check out all the books we're talking about this season. Thank you so much for listening. Read on.